My name's Kylie Pursehouse and I live in Brisbane.
My name's Byron Pursehouse and I live in Bundaberg.
Today's date is the 9th of November 2011. We're in Bundaberg and we're recording the Story Project. I guess I'd like to begin with a question, and the question is about how you became interested, Dad, in collecting our family history.
Well, it's it happened more or less by accident that one Sunday morning, we normally sleep in, and around about 8 o'clock in the morning, the phone rang. And when the phone rings that early, you always think that there's something wrong. Mm. And when I answered it, it was this fellow said his name was Peter Ludlow, and who I'd never heard of. And he then told me he was writing a book about Moreton Bay people. And I said, oh, that's interesting. And he said, there's a chapter in the book about your aunt. And to publish this chapter, I need permission of someone in the family. And I said, oh, yes. I said, which aunt was that? Mm. And he said, Aunt Hilda. And I said, sorry, I don't know an Aunt Hilda. But then he told me Aunt Hilda's story. And it turned out that Aunt Hilda was my mother's sister. My mother was the youngest of about seven children, and Hilda was the next eldest. And this took place around about 1906, when they were living in Mackay. And Hilda had been going to a doctor for 6 or 7 months with a small ulcer on her foot that wouldn't heal. And
so how old was she then?
Hilda was about 15. Mm. She was about 15 and my mother was about 10. And eventually, because it wouldn't heal, some testing was done and they found that this sore was leprosy, and which in 1900...
It would have been a bad...
it was bad. Mm. And leprosy at that time, there was no cure, and the only treatment for leprosy was isolation. And he was a 15-year-old girl in Mackay, and somehow or other, the word got out in Mackay that this girl had leprosy, and the family was immediately ostracised because leprosy was, well, I suppose it was like...
Well, like leprosy.
Well, I suppose it was a bit like AIDS, a bit like AIDS today.
That people, had a lot of stigma attached to it.
It had a lot of stigma. And immediately the word got around town. Hilda's father lost his job.
Do you know, what was he doing at that time, was he?
He was an engineer at the sugar mill. And each of the elder daughters that were working at various businesses in Mackay, they lost their jobs. So the family was completely without an income. And the only thing that could happen to Hilda was that she was going to be sent to Peel Island. Well, apparently there was no road from Mackay to Brisbane. There was no rail from... The only way you could get to Mackay was by boat. And it was a little bit difficult to find a boat that was willing to carry a leper.
So the whole family intended to move from Mackay.
Well, they had to. Hilda's father put their house on the market and couldn't sell it.
Who wants to own a house of a leper.
Wants to own a house of the leper, and he was forced eventually to burn the house.
Really?
The only way he could obtain any money from his investment was to sell the land, and while the house was there, so he burnt the house. In the meantime, this Hilda was confined to an isolated farmhouse some 2 or 3 miles from Mackay, and the only person that was allowed to visit her and stay with her apparently was my mother.
And she was the younger sister.
She was 10 at the time, so she was looking after and doing the shopping, going to the shops and going back with food, and because she was the only one that was allowed.
And by allowed, that was the health authorities at the time
That was the health authorities, and the police were involved. The police were guarding the...
Goodness.
And
It's amazing that they would think that it's not safe for anybody else, but it's safe for a 10-year-old girl to do all that.
Yeah, well, I mean, she had no say in the matter, I guess.
Mm.
But eventually a ship was found that would carry Hilda to Peel Island, but she was not allowed by the ship's company to have a cabin.
Mm.
She couldn't go and mix with the rest of the crew.
Mm-hmm.
So they built a wooden box, and she went from Mackay to Peel Island as deck cargo in a box.
Oh gosh.
And it took 7 days for the box to get there.
Mm. And were the rest of the family on that same boat?
No.
So she was just alone in a box.
She was alone in a box.
Mm.
And when she arrived at Peel Island, the box was offloaded onto a barge. The barge was towed. There was no one on the barge. The barge was towed and beached at Peel Island.
Mm.
And the staff of the leper colony, or someone from the leper colony, opened the box and let her out, and then the whole thing was burnt. And so she spent the next 5 or 6 years before she died on Peel Island. But the family had no way of gaining an income in Mackay, so they moved to Baffle Creek.
Mm.
And that's where my mother met my father. So they married somewhere around about 1918.
Mm.
That Hilda died in about 1919. We think it was a result of the Spanish flu that swept through the world after World War I. But according to Peter Ludlow and his story, he interviewed a few of the people who had lived at Peel, who remembered Hilda.
Mm.
And they told this story that she had a male friend, and they were very close, and the male friend caught the flu and died, and within 4 to 6 hours Hilda had died as well.
Wow. So and she would have been, what, 20, 21?
She would have been about 21,
yeah.
But this story, my mother and never said anything.
Mm.
The rest of the family had never said anything.
Yeah.
And when Peter Ludlow rang that morning, this was the first. And so after that, I started researching. I went and found the archive in Brisbane. I think you went out.
That's right. When we went out to Nathan.
That's right. Somewhere there.
Yeah.
And found the file, found Hilda's file in the archives and obtained copies of all the original correspondence that took place. And there was quite a bit of correspondence that took place. And my interest in family history just went on from there.
So was there wasn't really any contact with, well, they, I guess Grandma didn't speak about it, but there was, did they, well, you couldn't visit Peel Island or?
Well, I think you can visit it now. I think it's the old leper colony is long since gone. But it's interesting how coincidence that when I started doing the research and reading through, I found out that the doctor that visited Peel Island through all this time was Dr. Eric Rye, whose brother was the GP at
Gingin.
And when Keith Rye needed a locum, he got his brother Eric. So if we had have known that Eric was the doctor that was attending Peel Island at the time, would have been the source of information. He used to come out to our farm, Eric, and he was a bit of a an insect gatherer. And he used to get sandflies off the cows.
It's an unusual insect to be interested in.
Well, he was trying to find some sort of a cure or to alleviate sandfly bites, and so he was studying the sandflies that were found on the cows on our farm. He'd come out at milking time, and his advice was before you go into sandfly country, eat two or three oranges. He said vitamin C was the magic elixir for sandflies.
I wonder if that theory holds up today. So who was on the farm at that time then?
Well, the farm was... Mum and Dad were still there, but the farm was being run by my two brothers, Colin and Joe. It was called Purcell's Brothers, and we had a milk run. It was a mixed farm. We had cane as well, but the main activity of the day was milking the cows in the morning and then taking the milk off to Gingin, about 5 miles away, and selling the milk. This was before pasteurised milk. We were selling warm, fresh milk. And we had a horse and cart. The cart looked a bit like a Roman chariot that you stood at the back. And in the body of the cart was half a dozen milk cans that were full of milk, and you took a container and turned on a tap and filled up a pint or 2 pints. Or
so just as you walked down the street of Gingin, you'd go to the cart and say, "I'd have some milk, thanks."
Yeah, and people would put out jugs, and you'd walk in and fill up their jugs with warm milk. And I used to help my brothers on the weekends. And
so how old? Because there's
this was in the 1950s.
Yeah.
So I would have been 10, 10 to 12, somewhere in that age.
And Joe and Colin were, because you're the youngest.
I'm the youngest. They were in their 20s. The horse, if there was two of us, I used to go up one side of the street with a gallon container and pour out the pints, and Colin would go up the other side of the street and the horse would walk up.
Just knew how to do it.
Just knew how to do it, yes. We had two horses that, because it was a 7 day a week, there was...
Cows always needing to be milked.
Need to be milked. The The horses were really well trained, except on this one day. We were coming back home after the milk run, around about 11 o'clock, half past 11, in the middle of the day.
Mm.
And the road to our farm was a right angle off the main road, and there was a gate. And then you went down about another half a mile, down a hill, and at the bottom of the hill there was another sharp right-hand turn to the milking bales. And this particular day we stopped at the gate at the top, just off the road, and opened the gate, and for some reason or other the horse got a fright and took off, bolted down. Well, it followed the path it always follows. It went down the hill as fast as it could go, and I was with Joe, was the other, was my brother at the time, and he was left standing at the gate, and I was thrown out the back as soon as it bolted. And we watched from the top of the hill, and when it got to the bottom of the hill to do this right angle turn to the milk yards, the horse did the right angle turn, but the cart didn't, and it snapped the shafts and sort of went rolling over and over sideways.
Mm.
Right at the corner of this road was the farm toilet, an old earth closet country dunny.
Mm.
And smack into the side of the dunny went the milk cart, which the whole building just went over sideways.
Yeah.
And I can still remember my brother saying, God, I hope Mum wasn't in it.
And Grandma wasn't in it.
She wasn't.
Lucky.
So the horse, as soon as it got rid of the cart, it just trotted up to the where it normally stopped and just waited.
Calmed right down.
Calmed right down.
Mm, did you get a new cart?
We got a new cart, yes. And a new toilet.
Would have made people a bit nervous, I imagine. So what other sorts of things did you do for fun on the farm then?
Well, I didn't have much to do with the milking. I used to round the cows up.
Mm. So how many cows did...
Well, we had up to 150 to 200.
Mm.
It was... Eventually we got machines, and that's when the farm went ahead.
Mm. So that supplied all the milk for Gingin?
Yes. Well, they can... in the late 50s, early 60s, warm milk went out. Health regulations said you had to have pasteurised milk. So
I remember drinking warm milk in the 70s at school.
That's right, yes. It had been pasteurised to begin with, but it was never ever... So when pasteurised milk came, the old horse and cart had to go, and motor vehicles took over. But we used to go fishing a lot in between milking
so
time.
There was fishing on the farm, a dam?
No, there was about 2 or 3 miles behind the farm. There was a creek, Gingin Creek it was, and it was around about Christmas time, full of freshwater mullet, and during the months of November through to about March, the mullet used to bite on worm baits, so you could catch them only during those months. For the rest of the year, they just swam up and down the river with their heads out of water, but around Christmas time, you could catch them, and We used to spend a lot of time with these long cane rods trying to catch a feed of mullet. That was one of the things we did with your mother. One particular Saturday, before we were married, your mother was working in Gingin, and she came out to the farm and we went fishing. And we found this fishing hole which had a very large shoal of mullet, and we caught so many of these mullet, which were all around about 15 to 20 inches long, that the only way we could carry them, we had to cut up our fishing line and thread the line through the mouth of the fish and then tie it on to the rod. And I had one end of the rod and Gail had the other end on their shoulders, and we carried these 30 or 40 big fish back and took them home, and there was fish for tea for a couple of nights.
So how many people were on the farm then when Mum arrived?
Well, it was Purcell's brothers, so there was two brothers and their wives, and Mum and Dad, and I was stopping at the farm. So that...
Because were you teaching then?
No, I was... I'd started teaching then, but I'd lived on the farm right up until the time I started teaching, except for the time I went away to school.
So Mum came to work at the hospital.
Was
she working in Gingin?
Yes, she was a nurse, and she came from Gingin in Western Australia. When she finished her training in Western Australia, she and a friend decided to travel the eastern states, and they went to Melbourne and Sydney.
Do you remember what sort of car they had?
They didn't have a car when they got to Gingin. They eventually did have a car later on. They tried to get a job at Bundaberg, but because during the winter months there were lots of people looking for jobs along the coast, they couldn't get a job at Bundaberg, so they had to take a job at Gingin. So that was the set of circumstances that led to me meeting your mother there. But when they left Gingin, they went up to Atherton Tableland to get a job. And on the way up there, they bought a car. Which didn't go very well, apparently, because they didn't have it when they came back.
It was a short-lived thing.
It was a short-lived thing, yes.
So did Mum come back to Gingin looking for you?
Yeah, she came back and she stopped.
She didn't go any further?
No. And
So how long after that were you married?
Would have been about a year. Year after that, and by that time I was teaching in Gingin, and we lived in Gingin, and then we moved to Bundaberg.
So is it true, because I think I have this story in my head but I don't know if it's imagined or not, so did Uncle Gordon make a connection when he was on the council with Gingin in Western Australia?
That's right, yes. Because Gail's father worked for the Gingin Shire Council, and he came over here for at the wedding, and when he went back he sort of spread the word, and then a couple of councillors made a trip from Gingin, Western Australia, and they stopped off, and it became a sort of a tradition that if you were travelling from Gingin to Western Australia, you went to Gingin. If you were travelling to Queensland, you came to Gingin. We had a succession of people. When Gordon was working for the council, there was we had quite a party one night with visitors from Gingin, Western Australia. Was quite interesting today. I was driving up the street and following a four-wheel drive, and its number plate was a West Australian number plate, and it was a GG number plate. And at that time in Western Australia, the number plates were an indicator where people lived. So yeah. Anyone who lived in Gingin had GG at the front. And so
he must have been just continuing the pilgrimage.
I had a temptation to go and cut him off at the pass and tell him that I
we
knew
have
someone
a connection.
From Gingin.
So in when you were married and then you came into Bundaberg, we still had lots of family holidays, and I remember around Baffle Creek and that sort of area.
Well, Baffle Creek was a good fishing place, and one of the brothers, Colin, was a keen fisherman, and we used to go fishing there quite a lot.
And I remember the crabs.
We used to catch crabs. We used to go and camp. You have to remember a few of the camps that we had there on the riverbank, and at Myra. We camped there as well. Do you remember the... were you there when the hailstorm?
I was there. I remember that. I don't know how old I would have been there, but that was, we had the Datsun, the green 120Y.
Yeah.
So I think that was a later car, and Auntie Beryl was there as well. So I don't think Thelma was there, but maybe she was, because they tended always to come together, Thelma and Beryl.
I think Thelma may have been still in Bundaberg, and she was cut off because of
the storm.
The storm.
So I remember Mum, Beryl, Colin, being a terrible storm, trees blowing, hail, and I'm not really quite sure how, but I was in a car in the Datsun with Auntie Beryl, and she was sitting in the driver's seat and I was in the passenger seat, and I don't think there was anyone else in the car. And the problem was that she had the key as well, I think.
That's right, yeah.
And she was determined that she was going to, if anything looked like it was going to happen, she was going to start the car and get us out of there. The only problem was she didn't know how to drive. So I wasn't really quite sure how she was going to me safe.
It was a frightening hailstorm. There was so much rain that all the creeks between Baffle Creek and Bundaberg came up, and we were sort of stranded there for a 4 or 5 days.
Really? I don't remember that.
Before the water went down. Mm. So it is.
I remember after the storm, Uncle Colin had physically held the tarpaulin down.
That's right,
down.
Yes. I can still see him with his... He had a hard hat. Hard hat on in this...
And the hail had kind of gone up his arms, so he was sort of like he'd stuck his arms in two ice buckets.
That's right, yes.
But he kept the food safe, did he?
Kept the tent over the food. And, yes.
Did we have the kayak then? Well, it must have been before the kayak.
We used to take the kayak up there. It would have been pretty well round about that time. I don't know whether you, did you go out in the kayak, or was Tracy was the kayaker?
Tracy had the kayak, but what I remember is that she would be paddling in the kayak, and we would tie one of our air mattresses from the tent to the back of the kayak.
I don't remember that.
Well, this is a question that I have, because Kelly and I would be lying on the air mattress, towed by Tracy, paddling, and we'd go off for, in my memory, what it seems like, for some kilometres paddling.
Yeah.
And I wondered whether or not you were ever worried about where we were.
Well, I don't think I was aware that you'd gone. I think this is the first time I've heard.
I thought it was a great adventure.
Yeah, it would have been. It would have been. Yeah.
So, we never got any more kayaks. It was really just the one. So
that's right.
For all of us to go out on the water, we had to invent a way to make it happen.
Very good. Very good. And you remember Sandy, because he was there at that time. Sandy was the dog.
Yes.
That used to follow us around in the water.
He was a good swimmer, but he didn't like us swimming.
That's right.
Whenever we went into the water, he would get quite frantic and he'd swim out. Mm. And he'd always get behind us between... So we were between him and the shore.
That's right.
And then he would scratch our backs terribly.
Yeah.
So we would eventually just have to come in back on safe ground.
Yeah. Sandy was a big dog that just walked in off the street and said, "I'm home."
Mm.
And we had him for... He was so big that he could stand next to a car and his head would go through the window.
He was a lovely dog.
But he was lovely natured.
Mm. He used to follow us to school. We'd find him at Norval.
Yeah,
and then we'd have to bring him home.
Yes. Do you remember him going out along the street and coming home with a boot? A work boot?
No, I don't.
And we didn't worry too much about it, but then the next day he went and came back with the other work boots, so we had a pair of work boots.
Excellent.
And so Tracy, and I don't know whether you went with them, went around looking, trying to find who the owner of the work boots were.
Yeah,
yes. He was a big dog and he could carry these things home.
Mm. Yes. Oh, well. So Uncle Neville, he lived at Baffle Creek then pretty much up until the time he came in to Bundaberg.
Yes,
and we didn't really have any other family holidays out that
way. When Neville shifted from Baffle Creek, we lost the use of the shack.
Mm.
And... no shack. By that time, we'd got sick of putting up tents. Fishing has sort of drifted into the past.
Mm. Oh, well. So that's how you and Mum started fishing?
Well, I used to go fishing with... Well, that's fishing with Colin out to the Gingin Creek. Gail came with us, and then when we got the motor vehicles, we went further than Gingin Creek out to the Baffle Creek and Myra and the Glen, and all the fishing adventures just followed. And after fishing came camping.
Mm. Well, it just made me remember that we have that little Super 8 family film Colin and Trevor fishing on Baffle Creek.
That's right, yes. Old movies.
So I was thinking that was another one for the Archives, the old family film.
Yeah.
But I think it's been great, Dad, having this opportunity to catch up and talk about the stories that...
Yes.
Really contributed to a lot of memories in my life.
Well, it was good coming back to them because hopefully I'll be able to write them all down.
Yes, that's right. Look forward to the book.